Prepare yourself for invasion. This is Indie Invasion.
Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of Independent Invasion. This is Eric here, and I am joined with, as always, the man that can sell a screen door to a submarine yard, Mac.
Oh, wow. I just so happen to have some screen doors here. Yeah. They keep all the mosquitoes out. I do my best.
We're back to ramble on about some independent games. This is the podcast where we love independent games, and we just go on and on about them, talk about what we're getting into, some of the games that you guys may be interested in hearing us talk about. So, Mac, what have you been working on? Both of us have been busy with projects.
Yeah, you know, we've really, as some of you guys that are listening probably know, we get together a couple times a week over Zoom and paint and shoot the breeze, where we often use the phrase, everything is content for the podcast. So it's dangerous when you show up with us. But we've been painting a whole lot lately. And what have you been working on, Eric? What's been popping up on your desk a lot lately?
Well, I know both of us recently, we've been working on some Game Wars NYC, because we just got the newest gang that they had come out, the Ghetto Lords. I just finished mine, like a day ago, and posted some pictures up on the Facebook, and you were doing yours at the same time too. So
I think I finished mine up one day before yours, I think.
You had to mail me some.
Yeah, I had to mail them to you. So I should have been done a week before you, but was kind of slow. But yeah, we got the Ghetto Lords from Funky Skull Games, Street Wars NYC. Real great little skirmish game. If you're a follower of our podcast, you've seen we did an interview with the creator, Ian McDonald. And it was actually a really fun interview. Cool game if you like anything. The Warriors aesthetic.
Yeah,
from the 70s.
I just found out one of my local players has all that stuff. So it's like, wow, I found somebody that local that I can play eventually.
You know? That has Street Wars?
Yeah.
Wow, that's awesome. So it's a really neat little game. Has some of the cool mechanics. Got campaign mechanics where you're fighting over the boroughs in New York and set in the 1970s. But a lot of fun. And we both recognize that the Ghetto Lords, if you go to funkyskullgames.com and check them out, I believe they're for sale now because he had run a Kickstarter, and that's where we got them from, was our Kickstarter. But they have a very, very welcome back Cotter vibe to them. We're pretty sure that we found Mr. Cotter, Juan Epstein. I'm pretty sure the guy in the hoodie is supposed to be Horshack.
I think so. I didn't think of that.
And the leader is very much, I'm pretty sure he's supposed to be Boom Boom Washington. So for you really young guys out there listening, you'll have to go Google that one. That was where John Travolta got his big start.
Maybe showing our age a little bit.
Maybe just a little bit.
And I thought it was funny too, as painting, you know, I remember, was it on our paint show on Monday night, I'm sitting there working on the guy that's leaning on a big old ghetto blaster. And I'm painting them. I was like, wait a second. This guy looks like Penn. He looks like Spicoli.
Spicoli from Fast Times at Ridgemont High. We didn't do ourselves any service right there with our age, with showing our age either with Fast Times at Ridgemont High. But they're really great models, and it's a fun game. I encourage you to check it out. And normally we would throw this out in the news section, but since we're chatting about it anyway, Ian is actually going to be having another Kickstarter. Yeah, I think it's going to be in September where he's going to be launching another gang, which will be the Napoli Boys, which is basically an Italian.
Because they gang. Have how many? They have four right now that are available. You can get.
So right now the Ghetto Lords made four. So you got the Mollies, the Devil's Advocates, the Black Cobras, and just the released Ghetto. Did I say them twice? No. Yeah, Ghetto Lords, Mollies, Devil's Advocates, and Black Cobras. And then the Napoli Boys will come out, and they will be available as well. And they're real cool models. They're very much the pulp mini aesthetic, very much so. And I think there was like one of the first set like that that you had painted, wasn't it, Eric? And you made some comments about painting them.
They were this. So yeah, that was the first set that I painted for the game. And now the models have a lot of detail, you know, still, but it was the kind of detail that was easy to paint, you know, cause it's just guys in jeans and jackets and, you know, nothing overly, a lot of buckles and stuff like that.
Right.
But it was a lot of fun to paint. It was relaxing to paint, you know,
cause very I wasn't much so.
Overly concerned about getting all those little details that, you know, say a model that's from Wild West Exodus or Warhammer or somewhere Twisted. Yeah. That has all those little super details that are, you know, you got to use the brush. That's like one hair.
Right.
You know, trying to get them. So yeah, that was, it was a nice change of pace, you know, for me for painting, my normal models that I usually paint.
Now, the other thing that I had been working on was the, I'm totally throwing somebody under the bus here. I don't know if he actually listens or not, but I'm going to throw him under the bus. So Tony Neville is a guy in the Twisted Minions of the Engine. Minions of the Engine. I don't know what I'm confusing the faction name with the game name. Servants of the Engine is the faction. Minions of the Engine is the game. Okay. Anyway, he's in the group and he's a really good painter and he posts stuff semi-regularly, really nice paintings and stuff. Well, he started posting these models from Cool Mini or Not, from Smog, The Rise of Moloch. Okay. And I'm like, oh my gosh, these models fit perfectly into the Twisted aesthetic. It's like they're the same place, the same time frame. They're Victorian, steampunkish. I was like, I got to get my hands on some of those.
What did you do?
I tracked down the box just so that I could get the miniatures out of it. And I'm going to be honest. I'm just confession time here. The odds that I am going to play Smog, Rise of Moloch are very, very small. But I promise you, those models will be on my Twisted table. In fact, I already knocked out 16 of them.
Jeez. And that's the nice thing with those Cool Mini or Not. They're models. I mean, they're not skirmish miniature game level models.
No.
But if you need like that mass horde type model, Cool Mini or Not are great for that. I mean, you look at the Zombicide miniatures. If you play Ash's game, the zombie game.
Yeah, Last Days,
and you need a lot of zombies, just go pick up a Zombicide where they give you like tons of zombies to use.
And you can pick up just one if you have that sort of self-control.
Yeah.
I do not have that sort of self-control. Of So I did not and do not have only one Zombicide box. Although in my defense, not that this is a very good defense, but my kids do like to play Zombicide. So it's a fun game. Yeah, we do actually play that one. It's actually a really good family game because it's pretty easy. My six-year-old can play it. He usually gets us into trouble with the zombies, you know, because he don't want to stay with the group and do what we're supposed to. But yeah, that's half the fun of it. But you had some other stuff too, though, that you just finished up from Crooked Dice.
Yeah,
you need to share that.
I've been still working on just those random oddball miniatures that I've been getting from Crooked Dice, and the most recent one. So I did finally finish all those Mad Max, you know, Warriors of the Wasteland. But I had some stuff on like watch, and the place I was ordering them from is right here in the U.S. So it saves a little bit on time and shipping. And I ended up getting basically a Thundar and Ookla that I started painting. And I want to get them done and use them for, you know, I can use them for a number of things probably, but the main goal was Urban Manhunt. I wanted to use them as hunters.
But I think there is an unwritten rule that when you put them on the table, you must say, Ariel, Ookla, ride! If you don't, like, you can't use them.
I thought I was just going to do his little, his yell he did when he jumped into battle. You know, he's a barbarian. That's fair.
You can do that.
Or I need to find a horse so I can make him just jump on the, you know, that straddle thing that he did in the cartoon.
Yes.
You know, funny enough, before we get on tonight, Mac, I pulled the trigger and I ordered the box out of the cartoon.
Oh, man. There it is. There it is. I'm not going to lie. I was on YouTube the other night listening to the intro. and if you don't know, again, showing our age, if you don't know Thundar the Barbarian, you need to go look it up on YouTube just to watch the intro as it starts out in the future. Okay, it's post-apocalyptic, major way in the future, and it starts like this. The year is 1994.
Whew, I'm glad they got that one wrong. That
Yeah, right. Whew, we just missed that one. It came in 2020.
it was a fun, you know, it was our childhood, fun Hanover adventure-esque, you know. I mean, you look at it, it's like a lot of people are like, oh, that's like He-Man. Well, yeah, kind of inspired He-Man in a way. Yep. But I always thought it was neat because, and I've been trying to come up with ideas to play an RPG in that world, because you have that leftover super science combined with, you know, your fantasy. And so it's like a big mashup. Apocalypse type stuff is in there. It's like all those genres just mashed up. So you can do anything.
Oh, yeah.
And like those models, like I was saying, they'll fit in a couple different games, depending. Oh, yeah. You know,
and I think anyone that has listened to any of our shows know that the thing that's going to sell us on a model is we're going to look at it and go, man, that's a cool model. I wonder how many games I can put it in.
Yeah.
Because its value goes up exponentially based on how many different games that I play that I can stick that model in and use it.
Especially when a lot of these, so this Crooked Dice, a lot of their models are under $10, you know, for a metal miniature, which is price point. That's great. Why not take a chance and buy the model, you know, and have fun painting it? So
yeah, and they're the cast white metal, so they generally, some of them are as low as like $450.
Yeah,
some of them are pretty inexpensive, and they're also done. I don't know if it's, at not being a sculptor, I don't know what the real style is called, but I always refer to it as a pulp style because I see the guys like Pulp Miniatures and the guys at Pulp Alley that hassle-free minis that produce all of these miniatures, and they kind of have that same sculpting style, if you will, that vibe. It's not that they look the same, because they certainly don't. And everything I just mentioned has gorgeous models, but there's just something about them that's a little, it's just different, and it's a good different, and they're really fun to paint. But there's probably some technical sculpting name for it that I don't even want to know, because then I may get the wild idea that I should try sculpting too. Probably be sculpting a lot of like oozes, slimes, and things like that I can just kind of pat down in a ball.
Some guys that look like Toxic Avenger and stuff. And
that's how they would look no matter what I was trying to achieve.
Oh, man. So game playing wise, we're still kind of in that same boat of a lot of stores are open, but they're not having in-store gameplay. So there's a lot of people still doing, fortunately, solo gaming. And I know you've been doing some testing and some experimenting with some solo play at home.
Yeah. So I've been keeping the pictures pretty current on the Indie Invasion page on Facebook, but I've been doing a lot of solo play for Twisted because I love Twisted. It's, you know, one of my top three games for sure. And I didn't want to stop playing. We had just really gotten up to speed when all of this stuff hit, when all the COVID hit and everybody got locked down. I didn't want to stop playing. So I just started messing around doing solo stuff, and I've been playing almost my own campaign.
Yeah.
Like I'm like an RPG by myself. I've only been using a couple of models. And in the process of me doing that, Peter, the guy, one of the creators of Twisted, I was like, hey, you should do some solo rules because everybody's locked down. And, you know, as gamers, we say that to each other all the time. Oh, somebody should do this. Somebody should do that. Well, he says to me, that's a good idea. I said, oh. So he is well into actually officially developing the rules. And I just got the updated rules, and I'm going to play test them hopefully this weekend. We'll see. My son's birthday's this weekend. He'll be 7. So I don't know if I'll get an opportunity to test it this weekend, but at the very latest, I can probably do it Monday. But I'm really excited to test it because there's some really cool stuff. Really enjoyed the way Peter has been applying the solo stuff. It's slightly different from the regular rules, but so close that if you know how to play the regular rules, the solo rules are 5 minutes of reading in order to know what's going on and how to do it.
Okay.
And it's also kind of set up to be co-op as well. It's not really the intention of it, but it can be easily co-op too. So I'm super excited to just be involved in it. You know, I mean, that's awesome.
That is. And like I mentioned before, with everything going on, having a way to still play these games that we love with the solo option, it is nice. I mean, whether it's because we're stuck at home or just the fact if you're somebody that doesn't have a game store, you don't have a community.
Right.
You know, your community is primarily online. You know, you interact with people through Facebook yep. or the different forums and groups and stuff like that. It's a nice option to have that you don't have to wait. Oh, I get to play my favorite game every 6 months when I go into town right. type of thing.
And so. And for people that are interested, number one, I would say this based on the Twisted Solo rules. For starters, if the game you play doesn't have solo rules, who cares? Make your own.
Yeah.
That's what I started doing with Twisted just because I didn't want to play. I realize a lot of the army games, it'd be hard to do that. I can't see playing a solo game of 40K. That would be horrible because it's an army-based game. But the same would apply with bolt action or something like that. But for people that don't know, there's some out there that already have solo built in. The one you mentioned earlier, Ash's Last Days Zombie Apocalypse, mm-hmm. it has solo. Rangers of Shadow Deep by Joe, who was also the writer of Frostgrave, that whole game is just made to be played solo. Mm-hmm. It's not even made to be played any other way. So there's already some solo stuff out there. Pulp Alley, you can play Pulp Alley solo. It has a card mechanic where you're using perils, these cards throughout the game. It's got a whole solo deck, so when you play by yourself. So there's stuff out there, and my elevator pitch for it would be, don't let what's going on stop you from enjoying the hobby that you love. Mm-hmm. It does take a little bit to get used to playing it, but you'll get in a groove when you're doing solo. And for me, I always play it like I'm playing an RPG. And I just make up stories. I just make up stories as I'm going and write stuff down and play my little adventures. Yeah.
Yeah. Have fun. Tell a story.
Very reminiscent of me sitting in my room when I was 10 with my G.I. Joes.
I think we've all been there.
Right? The only difference is I had to paint these guys.
Well, the other thing I wanted to bring up in our little intro banter here today was I wanted to talk a little bit about Patreon and merch for the show. So a little show merch. Business. Some show business. So
show business. The business, do the business, Eric.
It was what just recently, our last episode. So it hasn't been a month yet. We kind of started doing some merchandise for the show. So if you guys are enjoying what you hear and you want to support us, support independent games, we actually, with our buddy AJ and Unipolar Games, started in this program that he started up called the UG Sidekicks program, which we're not the only one. He's actually doing stuff for like, I think 10 other games or companies and stuff like that.
Off the top of my head, I can give a few. So he's got Invisible Hand Studios, which mm-hmm. is a painting service. He's got Discover Games. He has Coastal Con as well. And he also has Planet Bound, which is the RPG that we did an interview with. And he's also doing a lot of stuff with Warlord Games for Bolt Action. Well, I won't say a lot of stuff. He's doing a lot of dice trays for them.
He's doing a lot of dice trays. Did he just recently start doing something with our buddies at the Blood Red Skies?
Oh, yeah, that's right. He did some terrain for Doug over at the Lead Pursuit podcast. Go over and check them out, too. But they are big, big, big supporters of Blood Red Skies from Warlord Games, which is a super fun game. And AJ did some stuff for them as well. Yeah. So Unipolar Games. I'm not sure if the guys at Lead Pursuit are sidekicks or not, but I know they're getting some merch from him. They're purchasing.
And the merch, basically what it is like, you like, you know, one of these stores and you want to support them or you support us. AJ's making available where you can get custom dice trays, shirts. He does tape measures. You can get coffee cups, which I'm drinking from right now.
I am supporting a small independent company by drinking out of my Paint All the Minis cup.
And all this merchandise, you know, we don't see, you know, the profit. It's a way of, you know, our little community helping everybody and supporting everybody. Yep. And, you know, I got a nice, our little neoprene dice tray that's, you know, it's got the snaps in the corner so you can, you know, collapse it, roll it up, put in your game bag and be on your way. But AJ actually for us has a code that if you go to his site and you either use the Coastal Con code or the Indie Invasion code, you'll get 10% off.
That's right. Just type in the code Indie Invasion. Indie Invasion for the Indie Invasion stuff and Coastal Con for any of the Coastal Con stuff if you want to support us there too. For those that don't know, Coastal Con is the independent games convention that we started up just last year, had our first convention. Yeah. And hopefully, barring anything crazy with COVID, this coming February, we'll have number two. So
yeah. Hopefully
I realized that we get there. Probably shouldn't have said we'll have number two. I realize how that just came across.
Yeah.
We'll have our second convention. How about that? That's a little better.
You could tell where our minds are most of the time. You know, we may be older, but we're still 12 years old at heart.
Yeah, that's right. I figured I'd better kind of qualify that statement or correct it or something. But check us out. Yeah.
I wanted to
go for it.
Also, with more promoting, a little show business is our Patreon, which we also started. And same thing, you guys want to support us. It helps us kind of keep the lights on doing what we do, talking about these independent games by the independent game designers to get the word out there of these great games. You know, they don't have the big backing. So having us and others out there that are talking about it and, you know, kind of exposing them to you guys that listen to the show or watch our videos, it is a great thing for them. It helps them keep doing what they love. You know, they're passionate about it. And if you guys want to go over to patreon.com/indieinvasion, we have like 5 videos up there right now, and some of them are going to be exclusive. Eventually we do release them on YouTube, on the Coastal Con YouTube channel. We have like 3 tiers that you guys can look at to see kind of what suits your monthly, you know, bill range, anywhere from as low as $3. And then I think we go up to, what was it? $10, I think.
Yeah. Nothing big.
Not a whole lot. And you get different perks at the different levels. I mean, you could get a coffee cup at one of the levels. So yeah, if you guys want to go over there, check that out, throw a couple bucks our way, you know, to help keep the lights on. We'd appreciate it.
Well, I'm going to keep my lights on anyway.
Yeah.
Whether you guys do or not, I'm keeping my light. I like my lights. I'm keeping my lights on. Okay. But I'm going to fix Eric's little fib that he told. It's just so we can buy more junk. It's just so we can buy more junk and keep talking about it and talking about independent games and painting independent game stuff, because there's just so much cool stuff out there. It's sifting through all of it, trying to figure out what we're going to talk about next is the hardest part about doing this show. Well,
for me, talking about all this stuff in the games is the community. I love interacting with community and meeting, you know, new groups of what usually become your friends eventually.
No doubt.
And like, you know, we talk to some of these creators, you get to become friends with them because they're passionate about their games. You know, it's not a big mysterious corporation that just wants to cash in on whatever product they're pumping out. These guys care about their product. They care about how their buyers, you know, react to their product. And, you know, they want it to be fun. They want it to be enjoyable. And, you know, they're all gamers too. They are the gamers like us that basically took that step to jump in and make their own game.
Yep.
So, and that's great. And I like meeting from people from, you know, around the world. Like we talk to people from the UK, you know, and you're always talking to Australia.
Yep.
So, and that's like
part about tomorrow. That's the 14th. Yeah. They're in the future. Got to message Peter every once in a while and go, "Hey man, is that book out yet? 'Cause you're in the future. I need to know. You need to hurry up."
I don't think that's going to make it come out sooner.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to work either. That's hard, though. Every time I shoot Peter a message, I'm like, oops, it's 14 hours ahead, and I just shot him a message at 2 o'clock in the morning.
But I think that's going to about do it for our banter. Yeah. Mac, you want to go ahead and we'll jump into some more Twisted Talk this episode? Because we got some more factions to talk about.
We do. This is Twisted Talk. And today, we're going to be talking about the Scions of the Sand. Now, this is a faction that I like, and at the same time, I hate. Because my main opponent in Twisted plays the Scions of the Sand. So I am more often than not on the receiving end of these abilities that we're about to talk about. Not always happy about that. But let's start out with just a little brief history of the Scions of the Sand.
What's their story? I mean, I have the two box sets, but they have recently released some more to kind of build them out a little bit. But what's their story?
Yeah, so basically what it is you've got Queen Elspeth the First in London, okay? And she has dispatched Carter. We'll talk more about him in a minute. He's basically the de facto leader of the Scions of the Sand to Egypt to check out this dig site where they suspect there may be something there to do with the engine. Okay. Now, in the process of that, what you have is you have the de Havilland family, okay? The de Havilland family, they are the ones that are not sponsoring. They are financing the entire expedition, okay? That's where Horace de Havilland comes in. He is the son of the de Havilland family, and he is your basic rapscallion. Nobody's really sure if his dad sent him to keep an eye on Carter or just to get him away from him. Because he's that kind of guy.
I'm thinking the later.
I am too, because he's quite the rapscallion, and he does enjoy his debauchery. So, but that's kind of the backstory. So they get to Egypt, and they begin the dig, and they stumble across this doorway in one of the dig sites, and in they go. And what they end up finding is it's an old temple of a priest of Set. And they work their way in, and they find all these hundreds of canopic jars. And I would encourage you, I'm not going to run you all the way through this part with the canopic jars, but I would encourage you to check out, you can go online, and you can download the book, The Scions of the Sand, Ancient Egypt Comes Alive, and you can read all of this fluffs, because there's a little bit of, I guess you would call it twisted history.
Yeah.
So some real history twisted up to fit the narrative of the game of where and why these canopic jars are there. But I am going to force you to go to DementedGames.com to read that part of it. But anyway, so they go into this place, and the feeling and the decoration and everything doesn't quite fit. There's this mystique about it that's like screaming that the engine is here. There's these tendrils running from all of the canopic jars to this mysterious source at the back, right? So naturally, Carter, the man's an archaeologist. He's an explorer. He's going to go check it out. But he's cautious, so he's figuring everything out, exploring it. And then we come back to Horace de Havilland. Horace is not so cautious, okay? What he does is he's like, oh, there's a lot of power coming from this thing that we found. We should start messing with it and see if we could turn it on. And he does. Because that right there is the whole story of Horace de Havilland right there. That's him in a nutshell.
Let's just
turn it on and see what happens. So he does. And what it ends up doing is it ends up waking up the avatar of Set. And he runs them down, and throughout the rest of the story, you can read all of this in the book. Again, like I said, it's free to download and read. And Carter ends up gaining control of the avatar. Sort of. He's got control of it, but the avatar is in a constant struggle to be free of that control. So that's kind of the backstory of them. And again, one of the great storytelling parts that I like about what Peter and Sebastian have done in Twisted is that's kind of where they've left the story.
So now you get to take the story wherever you want with that. And it's wide open. And this is actually the book that when I first got into Twisted, I thought to myself, wait a minute, if there's a node in Egypt, why can't there be a node in San Francisco? Mm-hmm. Why can't there be a node in Zunan Tunich? Why can't there be a node in Tokyo, in Beijing, all these places that you could play?
Talking about the East just the other day about that. It would be cool to get into the Far East and the samurai and, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah, so this is kind of the one that put it over the top because that is what they found was a node. What a node of the engine. And if you guys remember from our initial podcast, what we talked about was that's the story of the engine. Is every civilization throughout the history of the world of Twisted that had any power at all, whether it was an Aztec city that was powerful or Tokyo or San Francisco or any of these things or anything throughout history, there was a node there because that's what attracted the people to it, that power source, and the engine kind of just called people and that was where it built up. So that's where we jump into the faction itself. Right now, it's kind of the smaller faction. It has gotten the most recent release.
Yeah, it's the newest one, right?
Right. The Overseer. And basically, he controls some of the hounds. And we'll get to them. They're part of your faction list. So we'll start with Carter. Carter's the personality. And I guess if I had to describe him, the hard part of him, the tough part of him, the driven man part of him is sort of like John Carter of Mars, that story arc. But then at the same time, he's a little bit Indiana Jones as the explorer, and he's brusque. He's very haughty.
He doesn't yell, "This belongs in a museum," does he?
No, I don't think he does. He's a little bit more on the side of, I kind of like that. I think I'll hold on to that. Yeah. But the discovery of the stuff is what he wants. So since he discovered the node, he is an alchemancer. Once we get to talking about his card, he is an alchemancer. So he has access to the magic in Twisted. But since he's discovered the node, he's become more powerful, you know, having come in close contact with the node, and he wants more. He wants more knowledge. He's driven. He's got this desire to discover more. And he's kind of, his story arc is at the point where he's saying nothing is going to stand in his way of getting that more. And he does not particularly care for Horace de Havilland. You will find a theme in the Scions of the Sand. Nobody really likes Horace, but he's actually a pretty good model. And again, that dichotomy that we've seen in the other two factions we've discussed, that dichotomy of leadership, you have Carter, who's really in charge, but then you have Horace, who's kind of nominally in charge if you think about it, or he thinks he is anyway, because his father's money is the one that funded everything. So he likes to lord that over Carter, that he's the reason that there's so much money to go and do this. So, like I said, he's an alchemancer. He's kind of a middle-of-the-road character as far as his physical statistics. They're pretty good. My experience playing against him tends to be the guy I play against, Raul. He really, really, really relies heavily on Carter's alchemancy. And he puts together nice combos of cards. So I'm not sure I've ever actually gotten into a physical altercation with Carter because he doesn't make it across the board. He's just throwing spells left and right and making his people faster and stronger and tougher.
He's like a support leader then.
He is, but he's capable. He's certainly more than capable. If you jumped in with two Urken, you'd need two more real quick because he'd put him down because he's a solid character, but he's a really good necromancer. Alchemancer. He's no Nancy. But he's good. Now, one of the most interesting things that the majority of the Scions of the Sand have access to is those canopic jars.
Mm-hmm.
So those canopic jars, they took some of them, and they can use them in the context of the game. So, for instance, Carter has one of his abilities on the back of the card is he has Canopic Jar. So there's a deck of cards that go with that, and he can draw a card and use it to buff. Now, there's roles involved. We're not going to get involved in the actual rule part of utilizing them, but essentially what it is these are contained spirits, and they will empower whoever it is. So even though Carter's got pretty good stats, he could pull a Canopic card, Canopic Jar card, which is random. He doesn't get to pick it, and it could be like some super buff spirit that's going to give him all these powers, and the next thing you know, he's standing up against Oliver, punching him in the face and putting him down, and you're like, oh no. The problem is getting that spirit out of your person. So there's a risk reward there, okay, where you can fail and lose control of your guy basically with these Canopic Jars. So there's a bit of a risk reward there, but it's a really neat aspect, and it's also modeled on all the models, so it's pretty cool that those are there. So that's kind of him in a nutshell. He's got decent range. Not, like I said, he's very much a middle of the road kind of character. He's got a decent range, decent close combat, decent amount of life, and all around pretty solid stats. He's a good character. And I will say this about the leader of these factions. There's kind of a de facto leader, but you wouldn't even have to have Carter in your list if you didn't want to.
Mm-hmm.
However you wanted to play it is how you could play it. Essentially, anybody, probably not the Avatar of Set, you wouldn't want him leading your group. That probably wouldn't turn out too well. But you can kind of build it however you want. Now, did you ever get the opportunity to play against the Scions?
These guys were fairly new when I was getting into it. So I think I got the two sets they had that came out, but I haven't got anything else. I haven't even got into building these guys, just looked into them a little bit.
Right.
And a lot of it was the theme. I like the Egyptian theme that they have, you know, with the Avatar, and they have the Hounds of Set. Yep. And, you know, I like that Egyptian theme combined with the twisted world of the steampunk. You know, it's a different take on, you know, Egyptian theme that we've seen time and time and again in different games. So,
yeah. And we have an interesting thing to discuss when we get to the Avatar set as well, that Eric and I talked about the other night, an interesting quandary that perhaps at some point Peter would speak to, but as the creator, he may not even know the answer to this one. Cause this one's one of those things you do a lot of world building yourself with and play around with. So next up we have Agatha. Now, Agatha is amazing. She's absolutely amazing. I don't care what anybody says. I consistently get killed by Agatha. So she is all around kind of, she's a great shooter. She's one of the best shots in the game. She's got a decent range defense, and the fluff for that is she's learned how to find a good firing position. And other than that, she's kind of moderate. You know, if you were to jump on her, she's not really able to defend herself super well. But she is a character that you should never bring by herself. So I'm going to go ahead and tie her in with the model that you should always have her with, and that's Hercule, who is a gentlefolk. So I'm going to talk about both of them. I love the way that Peter describes Agatha. He calls her a paragon of organization. And Agatha's purpose on the expedition to Egypt is to record everything.
Mm-hmm.
So she's a writer. You know, like Agatha Christie, Agatha. Oh, there's a connection there. There's a twisted connection there. So that's kind of where that comes from. And she carries this huge, large bore rifle everywhere she goes. And always she's got her pen and her paper. And then she's got this automatic steampunk dictation machine that comes with her too. And like I said, she's an amazing shot. She's got pretty decent armor. Nothing extraordinary. No alchemancy, not real fast, not real strong. Finesse is about average, but her shooting is brutal.
Yeah.
Now, her shooting is brutal by herself, but the biggest part is when she comes in with Hercule. And the reason for that is by herself, she has a skill called Hunter's Instinct. And she can fire at any target that presents itself. So that can be really, really really, really bad for you. So she can make a single ranged attack against any foe that comes into line of sight. There is a negative modifier for it. And if she doesn't have any actions available, so say you've already activated her, it's not a free extra action. But since she's got an amazing range, she's got a really good range. You're talking about a game that's generally played on a 3x3 table, and she's got an 18-inch range. So she gets in a good firing position, and it's game on for her.
Yeah.
And she can reserve those actions, so you try to move her towards the last. But that position that she has is complemented by Hercule. And once again, we're going to show our age. So there's a show called Poirot, which is about this detective, Hercule Poirot.
He was the detective on the, the Orient Express movie.
Correct. Yeah, the murder on the Orient Express, yeah. The Hercule Poirot. So that's kind of who this is based off of. And he is amazing. What he is a gentlefolk of Belgian manufacture, and he was given as a gift to Agatha because he loved her writing so much. And he really, really liked Agatha a lot. You know, was trying to woo her with this gentlefolk. And he basically walks around. I love the descriptions of him. He is the best servant in the world. He walks around polishing stuff, making sure nothing is scratched, handing her pens and papers. But more importantly, he serves an amazing role for Agatha because he has a skill called Spotter. So he has, in the fluff, he's got what's called a Stringer Bates Second Sight. It's a device that allows Agatha to see what Hercule sees through a special linked monocle. She can essentially shoot around corners because her gun will go around corners and shoot whatever Hercule can see.
And that comes into play, that range where she can be 18 inches away, but if he's out in the front there and he can see something, she can't literally line of sight see.
Yep.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, he's not that tough. He's average. He's got a good ranged attack. But other than that, he's kind of average. His gun is pretty strong. It doesn't have the longest range in the world. But that spotter skill, and he's got a good armor. He's got an armor of 7 because he is a gentlefolk. Mm-hmm. And gentlefolk can be repaired if you have someone there that can do it. He's got some really good skills. But what we've found in our games where he really shines outside of being a spotter for Agatha is because Twisted has a lot of objective-based interactions. You know, maybe you got to open a door, you have to interact with X device or something along those lines. Those are all made with your finesse skill. Well, most gentlefolk have doo-doo finesse skills because they're robots. They're robots, and they don't. And he doesn't have a great one either. He's got a 3 for his finesse skill. However, he also has a 5 in parentheses next to that. And that's because whenever Hercule interacts with any kind of a device or machine or anything like that, all of a sudden his finesse becomes 5. It's because it's attributed to his attention to detail, polishing all of these devices and knowing all of their nooks and crannies from polishing stuff so much that he has this better interaction with them. And he's an awesome little gentlefolk model because he is small. He's smaller than a lot of the other ones. Actually, he's smaller than all of the other gentlefolk, if I'm not mistaken. And he's just a cool little model. He's a must take if you have Agatha. We haven't really seen, I haven't seen a good use for him if you didn't have Agatha. Because you would probably just want to take somebody else that has a good finesse if that was the only role you were trying to fill with him. You know, he's very much a support character, and he comes with Agatha, no doubt. Next up, we have Indigo Ford.
This is the one that made you buy the box sets, man.
Is it?
Yeah, I think so.
All right, so Indigo, the model, is... Look, let's just call it what it is. Okay, this is Indiana Jones in Twisted.
Yeah, Yeah.
That's what she is. She is Indiana Jones in Twisted.
She's got the whip. She's got a hat. She's got the leather coat. I mean, she's got the satchel, the pistol.
Yep. And she has been employed by Horace de Havilland's father, Lord Cyrus, to keep the expedition of Carter on track because, you know, Carter's the scientist. You know how they are in every movie, every narrative, every anything. They get distracted. So she's there for that. And possibly to keep an eye on Horace, too. That's what she's there for. And she has remarkable statistics when it comes to her speed, finesse, and combat. They're all higher than normal. It's not real strong, moderate armor. Got to be careful with her if you go up against anybody who's too big, because she can get squashed pretty easily as far as that goes. But she does have, she's got some good skills that help her to stay alive. She's got a really good finesse. Her finesse is a 6. Yeah. And if you're not familiar with how the game operates, just to give you a ballpark, you're looking at the majority of the finesse for the rest of the Scions is going to be 4. And when you're talking about stats that are generally only going up to about 8, that's a pretty high one. And she also has access to canopic jars.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a nice one too. And she also has the lucky ability, which is, that's straight out of an Indiana Jones movie right there.
I like that. Yeah. That's nice ability.
Oh, definitely. So being lucky, it allows her to reroll if she misses succeeding at a task by just a little bit. So it's really, really good. It's a great skill. She's an amazing model. You have the metal one, right? I'm not sure if I'm not sure if there's a resin one, just because she has her whip is wrapped around her body, so it's this long piece. And I'm glad I got the metal one for sure. I don't know, like I said, I don't know if there's a resin one, but she is a stunning model. I've consistently been slapped around by Indigo Ford.
She's one of those characters that her whip has that property of stunning, so she can kind of, we've said this before, kind of, you can't get rid of a character so easily, but you can kind of impede them, and she's one of those characters that can help you stun somebody to slow them down so you can get some of those objectives or move some characters up type thing that maybe can deal with the opponent a little bit better.
Yeah, and she, her whip that stuns works really well with her reaction ability, because normally you're only allowed one close combat attack, period, unless you are someone like the flower seller from the Servants of the Engine that allows you a second close combat attack. Well, with her, if she successfully stuns you with her whip attack in close combat, she is immediately allowed to follow up with a shooting attack in close combat.
Could do some real damage then.
Right. She is straight up going full Indiana Jones on you. She's going full on, Dr. Jones, you know, like Short Round did. She cracks that whip, stuns you, and then she gets a shot. So that can...
pistol, what is it? It's D8 plus 6, so that can do a lot of damage to you.
Yes. And even though the damage on the bullwhip isn't that much, it's still, you're rolling twice for damage. You're stacking that. On a guy like Oliver, probably not going to do anything but make him mad. Probably Bill too, but just about anybody else, it's going to, I guess to sound a little bit silly since she's hitting you with the whip, it's going to leave a mark. You know, it's definitely going to leave a mark. So she is a super, super fun model. And I think the most fun thing about the Scions, and I've only, I don't think I've ever actually put them on the table and used them myself. That's because Raul plays them. But they are really fun when they get on the table, because since they have that Indiana Jones, John Carter of Mars, Agatha Christie, whole kind of twisted dynamic going on, they're almost automatically telling an adventure story, like Raiders of the Lost Ark, because just the fact that they're there is telling that story.
Yeah.
Because they wouldn't be there for any other reason except to do that. So that's really fun. Then we get to the son of Lord Cyrus de Havilland.
Yes, we've mentioned Horace here.
Oh, we have. And he was brought up in a world of privilege and power, and he is full of self-worth and arrogance. He's a very special young man. He's very special. And interestingly, I love how Peter and Sebastian have worded his personality. And they say this, that when trouble strikes, he's often the first to disappear. He's gone. He's like, hey, man, there's trouble going on. I am out of here. But he, then they say, because he has a finely honed sense of self-preservation. However, he is more than capable of taking care of himself. So it doesn't have anything to do with like him really being scared of the situation. He just would rather not be in it. But if you back him into a corner, Horace is no slouch. He's got moderate characteristics. Again, ranged attack's pretty good. That's kind of an overall theme for the main characters in the Scions. He's a pretty decent alchemancer as well. He's got a fairly long-ranged weapon with his hand Giselle, and he also has his steampunk hunting falcon, which is just, it's really cool. The model itself is just really neat. And the falcon, basically what he does is he helps him in close combat. So any damage that's done to the falcon, that the falcon causes, any damage done to the falcon causes him to return to Horus. And so he can be in close, essentially Horus can be in close combat up to 6 inches away because his falcon will fly off, bam, do a quick attack. You're in hand-to-hand combat with it. It's not real tough. You hit it, it flies back, he shoots you.
Yeah.
So it's really kind of a nice combination. Probably my favorite ability that he has is one that Fagin also has, and it's the bow out. And that is being able to step out of combat with no roll. Because that, for somebody like, think about it in game, for somebody like Horace, for him to have his action, bow out, the falcon attacks close combat within 6 inches because he's now out of close combat, and then he shoots you. Meanwhile, you're trying to get him in close combat and he just keeps running away from you, bowing out. So he's a gorgeous model. He's probably of the human models for the Scions of the Sand. I really love the Horus de Havilland model. Mm. It exudes arrogance. Just the model exudes arrogance. You could be across the room looking at the table and be like, I'm pretty sure that's the Horus de Havilland model. Well, how do you know that, Mac? You see the way he's walking across the board? You can just tell that that's what he is. So we got two more to talk about, and I'm actually going to skip this one, and I'm going to go to the line troops, and then we'll come back. The line troops are the guardians of Set. So basically what they are is they are the Bedouin people that were in the area that the Scions came and discovered the Avatar of Set and the Node. And they kind of worship Set. So they see Carter as kind of a prophet. Okay. So that's why they follow Carter as well. And they're the Bedouin warriors from that area. So you have some ranged guys and some close combat guys. They're essentially, now they're way better than the Urken, so don't mishear me on that, but they are essentially what the Urken are to the Dickensians. They're kind of like your line troopers.
You could take more than multiple ones. And
exactly. They're not uniques, so you can take a bunch of them. And the Hounds of Set kind of fall into there too. Yeah. They're the dogs that are steampunk Avatar of Set twisted. And then you also have access to mummies. Not going to really talk about them. They're mummies because you know what a mummy is. Basically, you put the mummy on the board. They're really tough, and they go, like that. That's what they do. They're
slow,
awesome.
Slow and steady.
Yep. They're slow and steady and tough. But now, again, all of this stuff, you can go read all of this stuff because everything that we're talking you guys through is all free to download. Every single bit of it's free to download on the Demented Games website. Last one, Avatar of Set. This is maybe the best stats in Twisted, the Avatar of Set.
Yeah, he's a beefy guy.
He is an absolute monster. He doesn't have very many numbers that are low. His finesse isn't the greatest. That's his flaw. You don't want him doing anything. You don't want him sitting down with Agatha typing something up because he doesn't have a very good finesse. But he is an absolute monster in close combat. he's dishing out massive amounts of damage. He has a ranged attack that's doing decent amount of damage. He's an Alchemancer on top of it. So on top of the fact that he's over there pounding your head into the ground, he's casting spells as well. He has got some great, great abilities. You have got to read about him. He drains the life of the people that he's killing.
Yeah, and I was just reading that one. I'm just like, holy cow.
Yeah, and he's also got one of my favorite abilities, which is disturbing. And basically, you have to make an opposed roll whenever you attack him or he attacks you in close combat. You can shoot him all day long, but just to see if you can attack him, because here you are, you're a big old beefy 6'5", 240-pound, muscle-bound, whatever you are, and you're looking at his belly button, you know, and his his kopesh is as big as you are, and so he's disturbing. It's this terrifying thing, and what I love is that it's not you really couldn't say he's got a personality. He's the embodiment of the ancient Egyptian deity, and he was. So this is where the engine's cool. This is what Peter writes. He said he was brought forth by the engine to destroy Carter's team. Because remember, like we were talking about, Horace went over and goes, hey, let's push this button. Mm-hmm. And it activates the avatar of Set. Or maybe that's exactly what the engine wanted, was for Carter to be in control of it.
Yeah.
So that brings us to this point.
Okay, so this is our little spitballing, huh?
Yeah. So this is what Eric and I were talking about. So this is the only pantheon of any kind of gods or anything that the world of Twisted has spoken about yet. So what we got to talking about the other day was, are the deities in Twisted created by the engine, controlled by the engine, or is it this complete different entity that is potentially in your Twisted world in opposition to the engine in some kind of way? Talk to me, Eric. Help me. My brain hurts.
I like that idea when we're talking about that. It being, you know, there being a pantheon of other great beings, but I kind of like that idea of it being a competitor of the engine. Yeah. So you think about, you got these two big mega, you know, superpowers, and we on the planet are basically those chess pieces.
Yeah.
You know, and you think about, well, the engine was doing stuff for, we don't know what its purpose was, but now if you throw another element in there, it's like, okay, is the engine doing stuff to get ready for this, you know, kind of
right,
putting its eggs in a certain basket, or is it this other one that's it's kind of.
Yeah. And like, is the avatar of Set doing what Carter's telling him to because Set is telling him to?
Exactly.
Or because the engine is telling him to? Or is the engine trying to control Set's avatar and ticking Set off? You know, just it's to me,
yeah,
that's what I love about these games, is being able to grab hold of the narrative and just run with it however you want. Yeah, just
and a story. And that kind of goes into play what we were talking about, the different nodes and different parts. And we mentioned Tokyo.
Right.
We could see, you know, some of the Japanese, you know.
Oh, yeah, the Oni, the Bakemono, all of that cool stuff where you can start pulling models from all kinds of other games.
Oh yeah. Too. Maybe we'll see a Japanese dragon, you know, show up in the game. That a steampunk dragon.
I have a clockwork dragon.
So it kind of makes you think about the possibilities of where the game can go. And narratively where it can go. And yeah, it gets your gears going in your head.
Yeah, that's what I love about it, is being able to grab a hold of it and run with your narrative, whatever it may be. Because I know from the fact that I talk to Peter and Sebastian every once in a while, not as much as I talk to Peter, but that they love hearing people talking about these branching stories about their game. And I always feel like there's one of two ways a creator could respond. They could respond like Peter and Sebastian do, with excitement for what people are doing with their game and creating, or they can respond with the, well, this is my creation, you shouldn't do that. And I don't really ever see anybody responding in that negative way.
No.
And I love being able to, I don't want to say contribute, because you're not really contributing to the overall story when you do that, that's coming out from the producer. You're contributing to your little slice of the pie.
Yeah.
And I love that. That's it's why like we do this.
It's like they give you kind of like a little bit of a drawing and say, go ahead and finish it type thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's your personal finished story then.
Yeah.
You know,
love that.
They give you just that, just enough to kind of get a start in the world. And then it's like, you know, what can you come up with story wise with what we present? Yep.
So much fun. And I mean, I can talk about, that's one of the reasons that I can talk about Twisted as much as I can, is because I just feel like there's no end to what the story can be. And the other two games that are in my top three, guess what I can do in those two? The exact same thing. The exact same thing. But on that note, next time,
Eric
is going to be, that's right, we have one more faction, and Eric is going to be breaking down what's probably, in my experience running demos of the game and showing people the models and the fluff of each one of the factions, this one is probably the one that gets the most attention.
Yeah.
And that's the Guild of Harmony.
This one's got some interesting elements and the most variety, I guess you could call it. So. Yeah,
and again, there's that dichotomy within the faction in the Dickensians. It's Fagin and Dodger essentially versus Bill and Nancy, and in the Servants, it's Nouveau versus kind of everybody else.
Yeah,
and then in the Scions, it's the power struggle between Carter and Horace.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? We'll tell you some about some of that dichotomy as well. It's not even a dichotomy in the Guild. It's even more than that. There's so many more webs to be woven within the Guild. But next time, Eric is going to be sharing all of the lovely, amazing, and beautiful things about the Guild of Harmony. And if you want to be prepared for the discussion, you can go to DementedGames.com, and the Guild of Harmony expansion book is also available for a free download, and it is a super great book. Hopefully be in print one day, but right now, why worry about it? It's in PDF. You can download it, and you can go print yourself off a copy if you're hardcore, got to have a book in your lap kind of guy like we are. But that is the next one up, Guild of Harmony.
All right, guys.
All right, guys, here we go with the next segment, Phantom Dice. News and what to look out for from beyond. Yep. So, today, Eric, we're going to do something a little different, aren't we?
A little bit different. Usually, both me and Mac like to kind of do a feature game where, you know, find it, a little bit of a summary, and, you know, maybe something that's newsworthy about these games, like if it's a new game or they have some kind of maybe a new release or something, and that's why we're featuring it. But today, yeah, we're going to do something different. We're going to both talk about the exact same thing, because we haven't done that on the show yet. And this is a game that you've had more experience than me, and this is one of your top games, isn't it, Mac?
Top three. Yep. Yeah.
And so we're both going to talk about it. And I will admit, I have very limited experience with actual gameplay, just the basis of my area. I think I know two people in the area that actually play the game, one of them being our buddy Sean, who he's a champion of the game. He does a lot of demos of it. He goes to, like, Adepticon. He runs demos and games for it.
Yep.
And
Tech Rush is what the scenario is called.
Okay. And then I know he has a lot of interaction with the game creators and, you know, kind of review stuff when they got new stuff coming in and just organizing stuff. But
big time.
Let's go ahead and jump into it. And
let's do it.
I mean, so Drowned Earth, let's just, I guess, give a summary of for people that are listening, don't know about this game. What is the hook? What is different?
Because I like alliteration and we have a segment of the show called Twisted Talk, I am going to temporarily dub this section Words of the Wayfarer. A little bit of alliteration there.
Okay.
And the Wayfarers, to make so that everybody knows why that makes sense, Wayfarers are what the ambassadors for the Drowned Earth are called. It is also one of the factions. So, Drowned Earth, what makes it different? Okay, so initially, what I'm going to say, you've probably heard a million times, it's a post-apocalyptic game.
Yep.
Oh, no, not
lots
another one,
of them
right?
Out there.
Yeah, but lots and lots of great ones, lots of really great ones. Fallout's cool. This is not a test. I mean, there's great post-apocalyptic Last Days, lots of great post-apocalyptic games. I remember when James Baldwin, the creator of the game, put it out on Kickstarter and I first looked at it. And what appealed to me was that it is 500 to 1,000 years after the apocalypse. So humanity and life on this planet, Eulaia, probably saying that wrong. I think it's Eulaia. I'm sure James or Sean will correct me because I say it right for about 6 weeks and then it just falls out of my brain. But anyway, this world is, it's way, way, way past whatever the event is. They don't even know what the event was.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just the event. They don't even know what it was. But so that's one part of it that's cool. It's called the Drowned Earth because that's what happened. The whole world is this, I don't want to really say tropical paradise, but it's like one giant rainforest.
Yeah.
And islands everywhere, and the water levels have risen ridiculously high. So the main part of the game takes place in this lagoon, this network of lagoons, and that's kind of where, much like in the other games that we love, that's the area that's developed, and the whole rest of the world is kind of just open. Wide open.
Yeah.
Right. Kind of just wide open. So that's what it is. And then the second part that really appealed to me was this. Normally in a game that has different races, you might do something along the lines of, I'll just use 40K for example. You have your Space Marines, which are basically your humans. And then you have your orcs, which are all orcs and Gretchen and, you know, stuff like that and squigs. And then you have your Eldar and they're all, you know, they're your elves. And your races are compartmentalized. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's great. But what was the most appealing about this game was each of the factions had one of those different races in them.
It was a mix. It was a mix of different races, your party. So you think about, like your Dungeons and Dragons, your adventuring party. It's not going to be all humans. It's not going to be all half-orcs. It's going to be a mixture of humans and like in Drowned Earth, we have sentient apes and lizard men. And, you know, just there was races that we're familiar with that have evolved. You know, they've evolved to the point of that they have personalities like humans. They have, you know,
they were gene spliced. That's true. The cool thing about it, because that's where the phrase comes from. So I'm going to throw myself under the bus here. So the Drowned Earth just finished a second Kickstarter. Game launched a couple of years ago. And just finished the second Kickstarter. And both times, James had what was called a gene splicer pledge. And that pledge level was, you know, you give up your first child and mortgage your home and sell your car and donate a kidney. And you get to design your own model.
Which is cool.
Which is right. And it becomes part of the game.
Yeah.
And is available for general sale after the Kickstarter. Well, I did a gene splicer pledge this time.
Yeah.
So I got to design a character for the game, and that was super, super fun. I'm really excited about that. But so that's kind of the background. That's the setting.
Yeah.
So
the society is kind of rebuilding itself. So you have a mix of technological levels. You might have some primitive tribes that are living way out in the jungle that have no technology, you know, fire and sticks and spears and things like that. Or at the same time, you'll have these other little towns in the lagoon networks that are pretty developed. They have part of your adventure, if you will, for your faction is going out and trying to retrieve these items that are pre the event.
Yeah,
so artifacts. You're looking for the artifacts.
Quoting artifacts, and it could be like an iPad,
right?
You know, right. From the past.
Exactly, and they're trying to harness this technology and kind of they've reverse engineered some things, and that's kind of those are your objectives, those are your stories that you're playing through. And it is a fantastic game, partly because it has dynamic movement. So you're jumping and swinging through trees and diving off the top of buildings into the water.
You're kind of your epic movie adventure type actions are in the game, which are
your Jackie Chan.
It's a really neat game mechanic that they have.
Yeah.
And it kind of ties into one of the things that stand out to me is, you know, most skirmish games, you're looking at just that one level of your battlefield. And this is a game, and I know this is what really, you know, butters your bread that you like best with is the levels. It's a multi-level. Yes. So you can have like your ruins in this game would be, say, an old, you know, burnt out skyscraper that's got your multiple levels. Well, those are all active parts of your environment that you can play on. Like you said, swinging from vines. Well, you can be all the way up there and swing all the way down here while you're shooting a guy in the air. And I mean, that's a neat concept for a game. And that draws people in.
The dynamic movement is structured in such a way that when you put that big, tall piece of terrain on your table to play on, you can get to the top of it just because of the way the movement works within the game. It's not overly complex or anything. We're not going to get real deep into how the rule mechanics work, but if I'm not mistaken, you just brought up the website and you can download the rule book, just the rules, not all the fluff. Yeah, just the rules for free. So if you're interested in checking out the rules, which I highly encourage, and if you don't want to jump right in on that, definitely check out the Facebook group, which is the Drowned Earth fan page.
Yeah.
We've got quite a few people in that group, and there's a lot of regular activity. It slowed down a little bit because the Kickstarter just ended, so everybody's still taking a deep sigh after posting 12 times a day trying to get everything spooled up for the Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. But what else do you want to talk about the Drowned Earth, Eric?
I think one of the things that drew me in, and I know it draws a lot of people in, and we can kind of go back to the whole gene splicing, is there's dinosaurs in this world.
There are dinosaurs, and yes.
They are your one random element part of the game that, you know, you can take them as part of your faction, but they're who doesn't like to play in a world with dinosaurs where you could forget getting shot by the guy you're playing. You got a dinosaur that can jump out of the bushes and eat you.
Just when you think you've won the game, here comes a T-Rex. Wait a minute. What just happened here?
And I mean, I love the fluff that they have in this of this, you know, the story of ages ago of stuff that happened that they're not too sure what happened because of how civilization fell, and they're kind of putting pieces back together. And it's like these in the world were extinct at one time, and through meddling, you know, science.
Right. They didn't watch Jurassic Park, obviously.
No. I guess Jeff Goldblum didn't, you know, leave an impression on them. But I mean, it's neat to have that element in the game. So there's more than just the bad guys or your competitors to worry about.
Yeah. And the multitude of races is really nice too. So you've got obviously you've got your humans because you have to, right?
Yeah.
But you've got your humans, but you've also got your Diverg, and basically you could kind of call them, for lack of a better terminology, they're kind of your dwarfs. They're the smaller, more compact, stronger. They were gene spliced to be workers, and that's what they were. And they're still pretty much human. They're just a little bit smaller. And then you have, like you had mentioned, you've got the Barangi, which are the apes, which are fantastic models. First of all, they're beautifully sculpted. And the models from the Drowned Earth are some of my absolute favorite ones to build. Minimal mold lines, minimal flashing. And they're beautifully sculpted. But just today in the fan, I think it was in the, it might have been on the actual official Drowned Earth page, James, the creator, posted, what was the first model that attracted you to the game? And a lot of people were saying Sage, which is one of the gorillas. And he's just that beautifully sculpted that that's what really attracted people was Sage.
Yeah.
And it's a big old hunk of metal. So you can throw it at somebody if you really need to. The apes are a big old chunk of metal. But then you've also got the Saurians, which are your they're essentially, like Eric said, they're your lizard slash dinosaur hybrid person thingy mabob.
Yep.
And then there's other races too that don't have models. They're just part of the background fluff. But one of those races was actually gene spliced in the last Kickstarter, which was the Mochi, which are frog dudes.
That's right.
Yeah, so one of those was put in there as well. So that's pretty cool too. But the game is stunning. It screams for terrain.
Mm-hmm.
Have you built your board yet?
No, I've never built a board for this. Like I said, Sean usually shows up with stuff, you know, the couple times that I've run through like demos with him, or, you know, just hung out with him while he's doing demos of it. So it's one of those games that you can raid the pet stores in the aquarium.
Oh yeah.
Aisle.
Oh yeah.
And just get all the, you know, the aquarium floral type stuff. And
yep.
You can take some, oh man, you could, if you guys have like old 40K type environment, you know, with the burnt out buildings and whatnot. And, yep. Or if you find some, pick some up, slap some on some of that. And all of a sudden you got a Drowned Earth board.
Yeah.
Really?
They're easy to put together, and they scream terrain density, water on the board. Every model can swim, because when you live in a world that's mostly water, like the Drowned Earth is, you swim or you die. So everybody that's still alive, they can swim. So you can jump off of buildings into the water, which is super cool because you don't take any damage. So you can run away from people only to have them jump off the building after you and land on top of you and kill you. Not that that's ever happened to me at all. That's not a story. Okay, it is a story that actually happened to me in a game. So, and currently there are, let's see, there's one, two, I'm going to count them to make sure I don't get this wrong. Three, four, five, actually six factions. So you've got your standard four that are in the rule book. So when you download that, you'll see those four. But then you've also got the Wayfarers, which are sort of like mercenaries.
Mm-hmm.
And then the newest faction is just coming out in this Kickstarter, which is the Pirates.
Yeah.
So you're going to have six. And the Wayfarers are kind of mercenaries. You can take a Wayfarer in one of your other factions. But the Wayfarers are pirates too. Mm-hmm. But you can't take pirates in your other faction.
Yeah, so they're going to be their own thing.
Right. Right. So the Wayfarers will still have that access. But can't encourage you guys enough to check out this game. Because, again, everything that we tell you about Twisted, this game does the same thing.
Yeah,
it's narrative.
This is an easy one to get into. Like we just mentioned, you can download the rules for free. Check out, read through like how the game works. And what I like is the factions, like the little starter factions. It's basically, what, five models, and you're good to go. That's you know, that's simple to you know, build and paint those, and you can get them ready for the table and have some fun with your buddies.
Yeah. Yeah. It's five models. If you have that sort of self-control, and only buy one faction, then yes, it's only five models. If you struggle with self-control when it comes to miniatures, you will not just have five models, mm-hmm. and you'll be in the same boat that we are, or at least that I am. How many factions do you have, Eric?
You know what? Surprisingly, I only got one. No, I got two. Because I got from the Kickstarter, I got just the two basic ones. But I got a lot of dinosaurs.
Like, a lot of dinosaurs. Okay, that's fair.
They are one of the things that got me into it. And if you guys haven't checked it out, check out their Kickstarter just to look at some of the new stuff that they got planning on coming out. There is going to be a lot more dinosaurs coming out.
Whole lot.
So you can have some fun with that stuff.
Yeah, the pirate faction is coming out. There's going to be some new models going into some of the other factions mm-hmm. because of the gene splicers. So people adding stuff into other factions, because when you back at that gene splicer level, you get to pick what faction you want your model to go into. So they'll be sprinkled throughout. Mine is going into the pirate faction.
Mm-hmm. So how long is it going to take for you to build a boat?
What do you mean, how long? I got like four of them.
Yeah, I know.
I got lots of boats, man. What are you talking about?
You can have some fun with the stories that you could come up with this game. You know, you can be the pirates raiding the towns, you know, because they're they're like border towns. Or you could be the opposite. You can be the little party going to get somebody back. You know, maybe they're like the Vikings. They came in and took everything. They sacked that place, and you got to go rescue somebody. So.
Yeah, and it's very narrative driven. It's one of those games that just begs to tell a story. And I remember very distinctly one of the very first times that I don't know if I was talking to James, the creator, or if it was just something that he said in a video that he had done with someone else or what it was. I don't remember what that was, but what he had said was his intention with the rules was when you were done with your game to be talking about what your model did, win or lose, not what you rolled.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's very much a comment that screams, play this game narratively. And it can be played competitively, and it is. Not my cup of tea, but it screams for the narrative. Absolutely screams for it. And for those that were wondering, that is one of my top three games right there is The Drowned Earth by Olmec Games. So please go check them out. Go to the website, order lots and lots of stuff.
Yep.
All of the factions.
And if you guys, because they're a UK-based company, if you guys are in the States and are maybe looking for, you know, to cut down on shipping and time and all that, our buddy Alan at Discover Games does carry this game in stock. I think last I looked, he had just about, I know he had to do a restock on dinosaurs, of course, because everybody loves the dinosaurs. But yeah, if you guys want to get started, pick up a starter there from him. And like I said, if you don't want the book, you can just download it, you know, if you just want to get into it.
Yeah. And he carries the whole line. So he's got the tokens and the new templates and he's got all of it. So you can definitely get it from him, and they are in Georgia. So don't have to wait for anything to come from overseas. Although most of the time, even during COVID, at least from my experience, I've gotten several things from the UK, and only one was quote unquote lost for any length of time. And I got it anyway.
That was at the start of everything kind of going to, you know, people were going home and staying home, but I think things are starting to get back to normal now.
So that was how, so you can order it directly from James if you want, Olmec Games, or you can get it at Discover Games if you're here in the States. I am not sure where else they are.
I think Wayland Games is carrying them in the UK.
That's right. Wayland did pick them up. So that's great too. That's an easy place to get them from.
Yeah.
So there it is, Drowned Earth. I think what we were planning on doing is farther down the road, once we've beaten you guys half to death with all of our talk about Twisted, we're going to be talking about a little bit more about some of these other games, about the Drowned Earth and Uncharted Realms and some other stuff.
Yeah.
Just to mix it up.
Do a couple episodes where we do a little bit of a deeper dive into the game instead of just our broad overview, and talk maybe a little bit more about the mechanics and the backstory and the different factions like we've been doing with Twisted. So
absolutely. And not only that, but we've also, we have an interview up with James Baldwin, which is the creator of the Drowned Earth. You can check that out. You can also check out their YouTube channel. It's mostly hangouts on there, a little bit of background stuff, not a whole lot, but you can check it out anyway. Go subscribe, keep up to date on any kind of cool new stuff, and go check out the Facebook group, because there's all kind of cool stuff going on there as well.
Old classic flashback games
and news.
Right, so we have our flashback yesteryear game. It's a little segment in our show. We like to talk about old games from our youth. Maybe they're games that got us into gaming now. I know it's one of our questions we like to ask people when we interview them. And this episode, I am diving into some old games.
Oh, yeah.
So the game I'm going to talk about basically is a simple racing board game that was currently published by Hasbro, originally designed in 1948. The game requires no reading and minimal counting skills.
Minimal counting skills. All right. Hey, I'm in.
Makes it suitable for young children. Due to the design of the game, there's no strategy involved. Players are never required to make choices. Just follow directions.
Oh, gosh.
Do you know where I'm
going? I don't even know where you're going. I have no idea.
I'm surprised you haven't, because this is one of your favorite games.
Oh, no.
The winner is predetermined by the shuffle of the cards. This is a parent's favorite. The game sells about 1 million copies per year.
You better not be doing what I think you're doing. No. No.
What game is this?
No, I can't say it. I can't even say it.
All right, I'm messing with you, Mac. I'm messing with you. This ain't the game I'm doing. I'm talking about Candyland, actually.
I know, Candyland.
This is Mac's all-time number one favorite game.
I think we have to qualify while you're picking on me about this.
Listeners can't see this, but I can show you. Look at the notes I got for your favorite game. It's almost a whole page of notes about the history and gameplay, just so I can mess with you.
Oh, that's just wrong. You see, now people need to understand, I have 5 kids, and if any of you out there in listening land have kids, you know that because Candyland is so easy, kids want to play Candyland over and over and over and over again. And I have 5 kids. That's a lot of Candyland. I am not interested in playing that. So for those of you who also hate Candyland, let me explain something to you. Wings of Glory by Ares Games is just as easy, and you can teach your children how to play that. Rumble Slam by TT Combat is just as easy, and you can teach them how to play that.
To tell them that they can write into Indie Invasion, Attention Eric. No, I had to mess with you. You know what? That wasn't my idea.
Was that Mary?
Yeah.
Oh, no. All right. I'm going to have some words with Mary.
Yeah.
Candyland.
No, but for real, the game I'm going to talk about from yesteryear is one that I remember getting into. So we're talking the mid-80s, and we're talking about the kind of the explosion when we first started getting RPG games. And that is the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Other Strangeness RPG.
So, man, I remember that.
This was one of those fun ones that it was set in that world, based on the comic book created by Kevin Eastman and Peter, Peter Laird? I think that's how you say his name.
I don't know how you say it.
I butcher every name, so they'll get used to that. And anyway, the core rule book was first published by Palladium.
Palladium.
God, see, I'm butchering them already. books in September of 1985. So that was the first printing. And it was actually a couple of years before the at that time, the Turtle franchise really blew up. We just had the comic book. So this game was based on the comic book. So
And it was a lot darker than the Ninja Turtles in this one. For those that remember the old black and white, the only other color that was ever in red, that Ninja it? Turtles was red because it was blood, because they didn't just beat up the Foot Clan.
No, they made sure that they didn't like escape and regather.
That's right.
You know,
they
down
were
the
not
line.
Coming. They were not coming back when the Turtles were done with them.
And this had that more of that serious tone before, like, we got the animated series that made the whole cowabunga and one liked pizza and all that stuff. But the rules and the gameplay were based on Palladium's Megaversal system. Yep. And basically what that was, it was a dice system that used percentage. So when you're rolling, you're trying to get under a certain percentage to be successful in what your actions were, what you were trying to do. Similar to like Call of Cthulhu has, I think, very similar system. And that system was later kind of the thing that made Turtles stand out is it was like an early version of that system that some of those rules and their outlining basics for character creation were later incorporated into the second edition. It was called Heroes Unlimited.
Yep, I remember Heroes.
So it was one of those games that everybody remembers it, but they had that limited creation because it was just based on the comics. But from that came, an evolution. Because of that system.
Heroes Unlimited, you had Villains Unlimited. And then I remember, very specifically remember that book. And that I remember you could create whatever animal combination you wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the rules in the back for it. And I remember the first character I made out of that, I made a sparrow. I have no idea why I decided to make a Teenage Mutant Ninja Sparrow. But I did. That was the first one I ever made out of that book.
That was one of the standout things for me. It was making the characters,
Yeah.
A sparrow, though.
Yeah, I think I just wanted to be able to fly. I think I could have gone with like a kite or a falcon, but no, yeah. I went with a sparrow
or an eagle.
I don't think the big birds were an option, though. I don't think the raptors were an option. I think you had like sparrows and smaller things like that. But I definitely remember that. That was. My sparrow was the other strangeness part of the title for that book.
Yeah, one of the neat things too about the game is that for the most part, the system made it comparable with the other products they put out. So you could kind of mix them, the Turtle universe with some of their other stuff that they had.
Right.
What were some? I'm trying to think of some of the
Palladium,
other products.
Palladium Books had the.
Did they do Rifts?
Like you said,
originally?
Yeah. Palladium Books was Rifts.
Okay. Yep. So you could have the different dimensions or like the space. And I know towards the end of their line, they had like an apocalypse happen, but you were still the Turtles just in the apocalypse. So there was more mutants. Like I remember there being like a dinosaur guy. And I still have the miniatures from the 80s. that they made with, for the RPG that somehow I still have them.
Right. I think I still have my rule book.
See, I've been actually looking for one for a while now. It's kind of what sparked me wanting to talk about it a little bit. Like I go on eBay and I see books range anywhere from $20 to like $80 based on whatever their condition is. And because I just want to look through it again. They had a lot of like comic strips that were original by the creators that they made, to go into the book.
Right. Right.
Which was, it's kind of neat. It's almost separate from the comic book storylines, but it was that flavor of that world.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
It didn't have to be always the same bad guy. It didn't have to be Shredder and the Foot Clan. It could be something different. A new mutant, or maybe there was a different, mega corporation that was trying to take over the world, and they were the you know, the vigilantes of New York. This was before they liked to eat pizza in their downtime, so they were just about kicking butt. Yeah, I mean, the Palladium has, you know, they lost a license, and I think that's where we got the cartoon and all that stuff.
Yeah, probably. But I mean, it was good. It was a good rule set. One of the other things Palladium put out was a Robotech series. They did Robotech, right? RPG. They had Invin Invasion, Southern Cross. They had all of those books as well. And golly, I may have to talk about those next time, because I remember playing those. I loved playing Robotech.
And there's lots of copies of this. If you look, they did print into at least the late 90s. So there's probably a lot of books in people's collections that, you know, are just sitting there because it's a nostalgia thing. That's why we
like
talking about these old flashback games, because it's nostalgia for us. It was part of our childhood.
Absolutely. But you know, if that interests you, check it out, because it's not so much a collector's item that you're going to be paying $300 for the book.
No.
You surf around, you can dig one up for a comparable price of what you would pay for a normal rule book now. You can find one for that. If you want to just check it out, it's neat. It's nostalgic. And for some of you guys out there that listen to us, you're sitting there right now going, man, I remember making my first character in TMNT as well. So if you do, we're happy that we could remind you of that character. And we hope that he didn't die a horrible death in one of your games, but lived to be the great hero to rival even the turtles themselves.
Next time I'll finish Candyland.
Oh, yes, please do. Please do. I can see it now. People are going to start hitting me with Candyland on Indie Invasion.
When did I start?
I don't know, but you may be in trouble.
Oh, man. Well, so what other kind of things we got for Phantom Dice today? We got some news and con
of
things. So what kind of news do we got, Mac?
Well, let's start with a couple of Kickstarters that are going on right now.
Okay.
So we did an interview not too long ago and posted it up with Opti from Fragging Unicorns. And they are currently running Gangs of the Undercity, which is a cyberpunk / fantasy skirmish game. And it's funny because I just clicked over to the page and watched the number go up on the Kickstarter.
Oh, updated.
Just as soon as I did. They have 10 days left to go on it. Go over and check that out. It is called Gangs of the Undercity. And if you remember playing Shadowrun, it is very much a Shadowrun kind of feel. It's that blending of, much like we were talking about earlier in the show with Thundar the Barbarian, it's that fantasy with that sorcery and that sci-fi all kind of balled into one. There's some really great looking models. They are sitting currently at around almost 54,000 for their total amount pledged. Still got 10 days to go. So that's really exciting. Got some beautiful looking minis. They've unlocked a whole lot of stretch goals. As I've looked at the Kickstarter, I don't know how much you've looked at it, Eric, but I don't think that they've been too overzealous in their stretch goals.
No.
I know a lot of times when Kickstarters start getting the money rolling in, it's easy to get excited and just start tacking stuff on. Doesn't really seem like they've done that, but it looks really cool. I am backing it, if for nothing else, the models, because I can think of lots of other games I can use them in as well. Well, yeah,
it's that Shadowrun, you know, what's another cyberpunk game that I can think of, Necromunda type feeling that, like you said, there's probably lots of other games that, if anything, these minis would be great for.
Reality's Edge, which is also by the creator of This Is Not a Test, so they fit perfectly in with Reality's Edge. Some of them would fit well into the Drowned Earth setting. So depending on what you wanted to use, but in and of itself, there are a couple of Let's Plays out there. Beasts of War, or I know they had to change their name,
Tabletop.
Yeah, on Tabletop. So on Tabletop, they did a couple of Bat Rep How to Plays
they're good, but they're not as good because with the social distancing and everything, it's all.
That's right. It's hard to do right now. So they're doing a lot of that kind of stuff online.
Yeah. With the tabletop simulator. So while it is a good video and it shows you how to play the game, it's not quite as exciting as seeing the miniatures. I mean, that's really what a lot of us are into the games for, is playing with our little plastic soldiers, but it is good. And you see how the game plays, and it's really cool. And so go check it out. Back it if you want to, because I think it's going to be cool. It's a boxed game, comes with two starter gangs. Just get over there, check that one out. And then we have a second Kickstarter, and then I'm going to pass it back to Eric so he can tell you about some other stuff. But the second Kickstarter, you got good stuff. The second Kickstarter that we got going on is from Uncharted Realms, formerly and still kind of known as Deep Wars and Shadowsea by Antimatter Games. And they have been doing a lot of STL files, 3D printable heroes and monsters for the game, and are working a little bit of a rebrand where they're combining Deep Wars and Shadowsea, because they're essentially the same game and just saying Uncharted Realms. And they have 12 days left to go, and they are at 11,000. They are fully funded. They're that's 200% funded right now, something like that. And gorgeous miniatures. This is the third game for me of my top three, is this one right here. So I'm obviously a fanboy, but the models that the owner of the company, Eric, gets sculpted, some of them he sculpts, and I know he has some of them sculpted, but they are just stunning. They're beautiful, beautiful models, and there's a lot of flavor in the game. There's some very unique aspects of the game to check out. Anyway, go over and check that one out. It is by Antimatter Games. It's called Rogue's Gallery. It's a 3D printable heroes and monsters of legend for Uncharted Realms. And it is super, super cool stuff. So two really cool Kickstarters.
Yep.
And what do you have
there? Well, I got a little bit of news for us. It's kind of more so I want to talk about our buddy Jim Kelly, who otherwise known as a tabletop engineer. He is putting together kind of an online publication called the RPG and War Game Supply Sourcebook. And what this is, let me tell you, it's going to be a free monthly online PDF. So, you know, to check this out, it's free to download, and you can take a look through it. And what it is it's going to be a collection of like ads, you know, it's a resource of for you, the hobbyist, to find resources, everything from miniatures to terrain, crafting materials, new games, mats, paint brushes, upcoming Kickstarters,
podcasts.
Yep.
Podcasts. We may have an ad in there. Podcasts. Hint, hint, wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
And he actually said also STL files. If you guys are, you know, big into the 3D printing, he's going to have stuff like that. And the way that he's running this is a lot of these companies, you know, you want to advertise in it. It's like you go to his Patreon, it's patreon.com Gamer Supply Sourcebook, and you can sign up to have everything from a quarter page, a half page, or a full page. And this first month he's doing it as like a free resource to these companies and anybody that wants to be a part of this resource book for the hobbyist. But then for like a small fee, you know, you can have this monthly publication that's going to help your, you know, your gamers find you as a resource.
I think it's
a real neat feature that he's doing. Yeah, we're going to be in there.
Yeah, buddy.
Plugging away. But one of the other things I wanted you guys to be aware of and maybe go check out is he also does a monthly magazine, a regular magazine called Bexums, that you can basically subscribe to through his a Patreon that he has for Bexums. Do you know what the site is? It's Patreon/Bexums.
It's Bexums Bazaar. Yeah, it's Bexums Bazaar. But if you don't subscribe on Patreon, which we encourage you to do just because it helps him to get it out, but you can also just purchase it through Drive-Thru RPG.
That's right. He has a direct download.
Yeah, after it releases. So you can get it through Drive-Thru RPG, and it's not expensive. I mean, it is a download, and he puts a lot of work into it. There's a lot of contributors. I will say this, the skirmish section in Bexham's Bazaar is newer. So he has been doing some focus on skirmish gaming. But if you are an RPG guy, especially fantasy, a lot. And it's good content.
Yeah, it's little content like maybe like campaign starters of how your group meets, or it may be like unique spell items, or you know, treasures, or they have scenarios in there, maybe new monsters that a contributor basically comes up with an adventure around. But yeah, I mean, that's a neat one. He has hobby crafting type articles in there, which I like looking at because I don't do much crafting, just time-based. I don't have a lot of time to spend on that. So I'm always fascinated with watching somebody do a step-by-step of how to build anything from a goblin fort to some sci-fi, you know, airship or something. So,
and it's a hefty magazine too. It's usually at least 100 pages of content. Mm-hmm. And so check it out. Go to his Patreon. Let's get him 1 million Patreon guys, because I really want Bexham's Bazaar in print.
Yeah, we'll probably, what we'll do is we'll put links and all this stuff for a lot of the stuff we're talking about in the show. Yep. We always do. So you guys can find it easier just, you know, in the show notes, just click on it and it'll take you to it. But that kind of about does it for the news, other than we could mention cons coming up. We still have Mace coming up November 13th through the 15th in North Carolina.
And that one is, well, as of right now, we've got a... It's still going right now. It's still kind of waiting to see what's going to happen in North Carolina. Currently, from Jeff's last post, who is one of the coordinators of Mace, is they're going to be limited to 170 registered attendees, which they're generally 700 plus. So it's going to be a major reduction in size. But you know...
That's November. Things could change.
Right, exactly. That's a few months off, so there's no telling what's going to happen between now and then. But as of right now, Mace is still on, and I'm still planning on going at the moment. If for whatever reason they get much more limited in the number of people, I probably won't. I'll probably just do something more locally and gather a few people up, but... We are planning to be there, our little demo crew, doing some Twisted. So we'll be hopefully showing that off to all 170 people. Well, 168, because there's going to be at least two of us there. And we'll count towards that total. But that's the only con information we have. Of course, with the shameless plug of Coastal Con 2021 in February.
Yeah.
Which hopefully, working on things right now. Hopefully we will be able to make it a 3-day con in 2021.
Yeah. So that is, if you're looking for a con that is our show sponsor, independent game heavy featured show, you know, keep an eye open on the Coastal Con Facebook group. We're always posting stuff in there of like projects we're working on. Max got, when he gets news, he'll post it in there. In the little, there's like at the top, you have pinned the FAQ, you know, about the con. If people have questions about like where and when, and you know, that's a place to look for exactly location. You know, I know that stuff still kind of, you're still up in debating about where to have it and stuff. So as soon as we finalize, you know, particulars.
Yeah, that's still a little fluid on that part right now, but we've got a way. We're still a ways out because we're not until February, but that part's a little fluid still. But I think that's all of our news too.
Yeah. We want to thank you guys for listening once again to the podcast. We really enjoy doing these for you guys and babbling about all the minis independent games that we're into. We're kind of like we have the the squirrel moments where we see something shiny and we're just like, ooh, shiny, I need that for these five games. You know, I can get that.
Absolutely.
But yeah, thank you. Keep listening. Check us out on Facebook. Check out the CoastalCon Facebook. And please go ahead and help support, you know, the community by going to these different places, liking, sharing, generating some projects. You know, if you're working on a project, post it in there. You know, say, hey, this is what I'm working on. The reason we do this is really to grow the community, make people self-aware. And like one of our catchphrases is changing the gaming world, you know, one game at a time. And a lot of that depends on the community. So check out those, check out the Patreon. And yeah, if you guys have any questions, feel free to email us too at indieinvasion@gmail.com. Or you can even just send us a simple message on Facebook.
Yep.
We're both real good about answering right away because we love, you know, interacting with the community.
Yep. And remember, for the podcast, you can always catch us on Podbean, which is our main host, but we are on Google Play, Spotify, iTunes, Pocket Cast, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, and TuneIn. So we are as many places as we can possibly be. And again, check out our Patreon, the YouTube channel. You can check out some of our stuff on Instagram as well. We've got the Indie Invasion Instagram. Check that out. Most importantly, though, every time we depart from you, remember to prepare yourself for the invasion.
All right, guys. We'll talk to you next episode.
Bye. Ba-doom-boom. Hello, kitty.
Meow. 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 Meow.
Yeah, that's good. Good stuff. I'm going to bed. I'm sleepy.
All right, yeah, you're tired.
I know you always keep me up late, man. Keep me up past my bedtime.
Oh, man. That's because you're an hour ahead.
I know. I told you how you could fix that.
Yeah. Yeah.